Good morning, everyone. Good morning. We usually deal this morning. We'll try that again. Good morning. We usually try to deal with various issues that are contemporary and halachic. This morning is going to be a departure from that. I'm already telling you. It's going to bother many of us, and maybe many of you it's not going to bother, but you'll be bothered by, Rabbi, why are you so upset about it? And that's what you're about to see on the screen. So if you look, please, at the screen, you'll see the following in front of you. This is an article that was published not long ago, a few weeks ago, by a lady, I don't know her name, and the name of the article in the JC is, There's Nothing Wrong with Driving on Shabbat. That's the title. Subtitle, the first word is a key part of modern orthodoxy. The first word is a key part of modern orthodoxy. And we have to change in order to conserve. So this lady, by the name of Jennifer, comes along and says that part of modern orthodoxy, in her opinion, is that you're allowed to drive on Shabbos. Now, I want to make this very clear. She is not saying that she is no longer religious, and therefore she drives on Shabbos. If that's what she was saying, I do not think we should devote a whole shiur to it. We have to try to outreach. She's also not saying, I have went from modern orthodoxy to conservative reform Judaism, which allows driving on Shabbat. She didn't say that either. She says that there's nothing wrong with driving on Shabbat, and it's part of modern orthodoxy. And in this article, she makes 4 points, which you see in front of you, in different colors. Point number one in orange is the following point. These are her assumptions as to why driving on Shabbos is part and not a part of modern orthodoxy. Point number one in orange, the challenge for each generation is to find a level of observance that feels right rather than just copy and paste. So the first assumption she makes is that your job, Bruce, in this day and age, is to find the level of observance of Judaism that feels right to you, which is going to be different than a level of observance that feels right to your Jewish neighbor, which is going to be different from a level of observance that feels right to someone else. And then, just in case you didn't get her point, let me just finish. Yet increasingly, I'm seeing it as a way of observing Judaism that fits with the person. Assumption number one, Judaism has to fit with the person. The person does not have to fit into Judaism. The person does not have to change their life in order to fit the dictates of living a Torah lifestyle. But opposite, the Torah has to come along and make itself right for me. If I can give a very simple analogy, you don't go to the store and say, hey, there is a beautiful suit I'd like to buy, but by golly, it doesn't fit me, so I'll lose weight for the suit to fit me. No, just give me a size that fits me. Give me the higher size, so it's a 54, give me a 56. That's assumption number one. Judaism has to fit me. I don't have to fit in into anyone else. Someone had a comment already. Yes. Exactly. Harold gives the nafkamina, pick and choose. Whatever's good for you is part of your observance. Whatever's not good for you, again, the whole emphasis is you, then obviously you don't keep whatever it might be. So this lady says driving on Shabbat doesn't fit her. So she's going to drive on Shabbat. If it did fit her, fine. It could very well be matzah fits her. Okay? Apple and honey fits her. But sukkah, she's obviously Pturah, so works out well. I'm not going to build a sukkah, but for sake of argument, making Kiddush doesn't fit me. I don't like to drink neither grape juice nor wine. I'm not going to make Kiddush. Exactly, Harold. That's the nafkamina. Point number two, and this is in purple. Point number two, better that... Someone's screaming here. Yes. Nothing. Better than that, than choosing an existence that leaves Judaism out altogether. She makes a point in this article that basically says that it's far better for you to keep something than nothing. An assumption that I believe is 100% true. I spoke about this in the past, that God in Mara gave us just 3 mitzvot. Whoever asked for cafe shachor, please mute yourself. The assumption is, and this is an interesting assumption, that something is not nothing. That's true on your way to becoming a full observant Jew. That something is something. So even if you observe a few mitzvot, not all the mitzvot, it means something. Here she's saying the opposite. She knows that there's 613 mitzvot, and she knows that she's violating them. But better that you rabbis conserve and basically allow it, then you'll get nothing. In other words, she comes with a threat, and she says, you better allow this, because if not, we're going to throw off everything else. That's assumption number 2, that if someone comes to the Torah and the mitzvot and they can't keep it all, okay, someone's screaming while I'm talking, I'll be happy to listen to you, but please let me finish the sentence. The assumption is that better that than choosing an existence that leaves out Judaism altogether. So we come to the laws of Shabbos, and the laws of Shabbos are pretty harsh. So what we're going to do is we're going to say, rabbis, you're going to call me a Shomer Shabbos Jew, even though I'm keeping 1 out of the 39 malachot that are absolutely forbidden on Shabbos, because better I do that than nothing. So for sake of argument, this lady's going to say, I'm not going to plant on Shabbos. I'm not going to thresh the fields on Shabbos, Choresh and Zoreah. But I'm going to cook. And you better call it Judaism, because if not, I'm going to throw off even those. That's point number 2. So point number 1 is Judaism has to fit me. I don't have to fit into Judaism. Point number 2 is that better we keep something than nothing. And if you say that's not correct, then we're not going to keep nothing. Yes, someone had a comment. Go.
I have 2 comments.
Yes, who's talking, first of all?
Avi Pfeiffer.
Avi, go right ahead, Avi.
On point number 1, don't we all do, on some level, that kind of Judaism, you know, this is more my tip for me, less my tip for me. We all do in some form of it. And on point number 2, let's say in the front, I have kids in our, let's say I have friends in our trouble, the kids have friends in our trouble shoppers. They're driving their friend on Shabbos to come to have meals with their parents. I mean, what? Not to throw them out altogether is not a solution either.
So regarding point number 1, we're going to get to it later. Namely, point number 1 is, do we all do that? I'm going to get to that later. Now, regarding point number 2, that's not a question of, is driving on Shabbat allowed or not allowed? The question is, when someone does a prohibition that's clearly not allowed by our Torah, how do we relate to it? And that's more of a strategic, tactical question, which has halachic ramifications. Namely, as you know, Avi, just like the Torah says you have to reprimand a fellow Jew for doing an Avera, the same Torah says, but if they won't listen, it's better not to reprimand them, but rather to do other things to try to bring them closer. So that's not the same at all as this question. Namely, she's saying, not, I drive on Shabbos, I know it's wrong, but rather she says, no, you're going to allow it now because I want to drive. I woke up in the morning and I want to drive. Now, not only are you going to allow it, you're going to call it Judaism. So that's a different argument than someone's doing something against the Torah. How do we relate to it? Yes, Bruce.
Styles of legitimate Judaism at different levels of practice, and it doesn't fit right for everyone.
that's Bruce, you're dealing with two different things than you're dealing with something different than me. What you're dealing with is once you keep the 613 commandments and all the rabbinic commandments and the customs of the Jewish people, what style of Judaism after all of that are you keeping? Do you wear a shtreimel or do you wear a kippah sruga, which I call the religious Zionist shtreimel? Okay, but Bruce, that's a very, very big, I would say huge, stone throw away. Do I wear a shtreimel on Shabbos or not? Do I dress this kind of modesty or not? Then saying I'm going to throw off one of the biblical commandments of the Torah, and you're going to call it Judaism. On some level, that's true, Bruce, but that's a different shear that we've given many times, and that is diversity within Judaism and how beautiful it is. How beautiful it is that we don't dress the same. How beautiful it is that we don't all daven the same. There's at least 12 ways to daven to Hashem that are all legitimate and halachic. That's the Magid Abraham at the beginning of Hilchos Tefillah. We've given shiurim on it, and I'm 100% for it personally. I think it's beautiful. I don't want every Jew to be in a straitjacket. However, that's once you say Naaseh v'nishma. Do I make myself clear? But if you didn't say Naaseh v'nishma, then it's not. You can't say, oh, if I wear a shtreimel on Shabbos or not, that's like if I eat chametz on Pesach or not. It's not the same question at all. Right. Okay, so we're going to get into it in a minute. Exactly that. Do we, on some level or another, all try to fit Judaism into our lives and each one fits differently? Or there is a certain objective size and then we all add the tapestry to it. Okay? Let's go on to point number three. I love point number three. It's in red. Point number three is that Judaism is more about its spirit than its details. A way to get the best of Jewishness.
I have a question for you.
Yes, Irving.
Okay. Thing is, just because she doesn't want to drive on Shabbos doesn't make her Jewish. I mean, she's Jewish, but she's violating a Torah law.
Yep. No one's going to stop her. But Irving, she's making a different point. She's saying driving on Shabbos is now Judaism, and you're going to call it Judaism, whether you like it or not. Because if you don't, point number two, I'm going to throw off more. So you're going to allow this. You're going to say it's Judaism. You're going to call me a modern Orthodox Jew. And if you don't, I'm going to throw off more of the Orthodox. Point number three in red. And this is my favorite point. Judaism, it's not its details, but its spirit. Does anyone... Irving. Yes, Irving.
Okay. That's because she doesn't drive on Shabbos. It's good for her. Doesn't make it right.
Correct. But she's saying yes.
Right. If she wants to be a non-Jew that doesn't deserve, that's fine. We don't have the cops out to arrest you.
Yep.
Not doing the right thing.
Well, Irving said it right. She's saying, I'm going to speak Lashon Hara because I want you to take that law and put an X on it, take it out of the Torah. Why? Because it doesn't fit my lifestyle. I love to slander. And Irving's saying, we all slander, but we know it's wrong. We don't for 1 minute say it's part of Judaism. She's saying, no, make it part of Judaism. And if you don't, point number two, I'm going to stop and do even less. Point number three is, Judaism is not about its details, but its spirit. I quote, the Judaism where the letter of the ancient law is less important than the spirit of our rites. To give an analogy and make it very clear, Shabbos is about sitting around a white tablecloth and talking to each other and singing with each other. Shabbos is less about how the food was prepared, how you made the cup of tea, how you put on or off the lights in the house, and whether your air conditioner is working via a timer or by you putting it on. What's the essence of Shabbos? What's the most important part of Shabbos? The spirit. So now let's go to the Seder. The Seder is not about Tzvi eating the right amount of matzah and drinking the right amount of wine and saying Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and leaning when you're supposed to and not leaning when you're not supposed to. No! What's the Seder about? The Seder's about family coming together and eating. What you do there, you read the Haggadah, you don't read the Haggadah. Big deal. So it says there, Kol shalo amar shalshad varim elu bepesach, lo yatza yedei chovato, whoever doesn't say these three things didn't fulfill their obligation. Big deal, so I don't fulfill my obligation. The most important obligation is family coming together. Okay? Let's put another analogy here. Okay, Tzvi's gonna like this one because he was a gabbai. People would come to shul, never open up a sitter. They're gonna talk the whole entire davening. Eventually, as a gabbai, Tzvi's gonna come up to them and tell them what all gabbais have been trained to do. In gabbai school, they teach you to say shush and not spit when you say it. Right? Right? Shh! And don't spit on the guy because germs. Well, Tzvi eventually says that. Instead of them saying, all right, until Tzvi gets out of the way, I'm going to be quiet. Like, you know, when you're driving on the highway and you see the cops sitting there, you slow down until you don't see them in your rear view mirror, and then you speed up again. Right, Tzvi? So, they don't say that. They say, Tzvi, you know what the most important part of coming to shul is? The social aspect of seeing people. So we're talking. That's the most important part. Davening. Davening's on the side. Indeed, Tzvi is alluding to a Mefurash Gemara in the Sechet Shabbos that says, whoever calls a Beit Knesset a place for Beit Ha'am, it's the place of the people, it's a huge Aveira. Huge Aveira. And that's what he's alluding to. And indeed, that's what she's saying. The most important part of Shabbos is the spirit, it's not the details. So point number one is, Judaism fits into my life, I don't need to fit into its life. Point number two is, if you don't allow it, threat, I'm going to do less. Point number three, Judaism is more the spirit than the details. And point number four in yellow, my favorite point of them all, after all, why I am at home in modern Orthodox Judaism, emphasis is, and has always been on the modern, whether in terms of how I dress or what I eat. When I look at the word modern Orthodoxy, the most important part is modern, because that comes first. Secondary is Judaism. So you have to be machmir on the modern and less machmir on the Judaism. Those are her four points, just to reiterate very quickly. Point number one is Judaism will fit into my life and not vice versa. Point number two is if you don't allow it, I'm going to do less. Point number three is Judaism is not about its details, it's about its spirit. And point number four is that modern Orthodoxy is more about modern than Orthodoxy. I believe I presented her point of view, and now after presenting her point of view, you can well imagine why I haven't been sleeping well. Because she just presented, in my opinion, a modern Orthodox Judaism, and I'm part of the modern Orthodox world, but she just presented a modern Orthodox Judaism that, quite frankly, if this was the way people thought, I think that today we can begin to close the shuls. We could begin to close the schools. There's no future. And I'm going to explain why. But first, let's see if there's a little validity to what she says. This is a halacha shir. So let's see. And let's indeed see if it leads. There's something here. Point number one as an intro. And that is that the Torah is not just about what it says in the books. It's also about the reality outside your study. Namely, it's not just the books in your study. It's what's happening outside. As you know, the Rambam has to define for us what it means to be a Yirei Shamayim. Have you ever heard that term, Arthur? Yirat Shamayim, right? Okay, if you want to have Yirat Shamayim, how do you do it? The Rambam says, I have two different ways. Number one, keep Torah and Mitzvot. In the Sefer HaMitzvot, He says in Mitzvah Gimel and Dalit, right at the beginning, you want to get to Ahavat Hashem and Yirat Hashem, you want to love God, you want to have reverence of God. Shenitboden v'naskil mitzvotav v'fu'ulotav, ad shenesigeyu v'nitadeg b'hasagato tachlit ha'anuk. How do you get to loving God? By doing all the mitzvot. On the other hand, how do you get to Yirat of God? You got to be scared stiff that God's going to punish you for averos. Shetzivanu la'amin yirato yitaleh ulehi pached mimeno. You have to be scared of God. Why? Because nira b'yad don't show. So how do you get to the love of God? You keep mitzvot. How do you get to Yirat of God? How do you get scared of God? You're scared what the punishment will be if you don't do mitzvot. On the other hand, the Rambam in Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah, no more, no less, the laws of the fundamentals of our Torah, says, Heecha derech l'ahavato v'yirato, how do you get to loving God and having reverence of God? B'sha'ashi yitponen ha'adam b'ma'asav uv'rav. The best way to do it is, Jeff, you take a microscope. In the microscope, you put a snowflake or a leaf, and you see, wow, look at the amazing creations of God. Namely, you don't look in the books as to how to keep Shabbos or keep Pesach. You look outside, and you see, hey, this is the way to keep Judaism. You look outside, you look at what a wonderful world it is, and you say, wow. So first of all, Judaism is not just about the books, it's about reality. And when we deal with this question at hand, or any halakhic question, I've always said, this hand has to have books in it. This hand has to have reality. That's the only way to paskin halacha. That's the only way to lead, be it your families, be it others. You want to lead? You have to be 100% above and beyond the laws involved in the books. And you have to understand reality 100%. That's why you got two hands and not one. That's assumption number one. So we're going to deal with this article, but we can't be blind that, as everyone here in this particular shiur said, there is a reality out there where people believe that Judaism means whatever fits me, not what it says in the books that I have to fit into, what fits me. We can't be blind that these things are happening. And if we're blind to it and just say it's usher, we're not going to have much influence. On the other hand, we can't be blind that many of the things that people say I'm not going to do happen to be 100% forbidden. So we need two hands when we deal with this issue. Number two. The Rambam says something very interesting that's important at this time of the year. And that is that if you forgot, if you said Kriyat Shema, because you just woke up in the morning, Zman Kriyat Shema is about to come, and you forgot if you said it, then not only do you say Kriyat Shema again, but you say the Brachot before and after again. Now, why is that problematic in our eyes? Because what do we usually say? If you don't know if you benched the Lulav and Etrog on the first day of Sukkot, if you don't know if you blew Shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, we usually say, do the mitzvah, but don't make the bracha, because safek brachot lahakel, but safek d'oraita lechumra. All of a sudden, here there's a departure from it, and the Rambam says, not only do you say kriyat shema, you say it's accompanying brachot. Very interesting, Rambam. In my opinion, the reason is exactly for what we just said. What's the first bracha of kriyat shema in the morning, or in the evening? It's about nature. Yotzer Or, Uvarei Choshech, Hamiri La'aretz, Yotzer Ame Orot, it's all about nature. What's the second bracha about? The Jewish people and learning Torah. It's exactly the two assumptions we just said. On the one hand, nature, reality. On the other hand, Torah, in the books. So assumption number one is you need to have two hands. Assumption number two. The Gemara in Sota says something very interesting, and I heard this from Rabbi Yonasan Sachs. He's the rabbi of Agudat Yisrael, I forgot the formal name, in Passaic, New Jersey, one of the huge Talmud Chachams of our generations. And I have to admit, I heard this from him. He said, Mishemet Rabbi Akiva batel kvodat Torah. In a Mishnah it says, once Rabbi Akiva died, there's no kvodat Torah. And in the same Mishnah, on the same daf, in the same shas, it says, "Umishimet Rabban Gamliel Azakein Batel Kvod HaTorah." Does anyone see a problem here? Let me put it to you this way. Have you ever seen a situation where you walk into a building and it says this building was dedicated by, and it gives you two names? It's either the Cohn building or the Rabinowitz building. It can't be both Cohn and Rabinowitz, because if it's both Cohn and Rabinowitz, I can promise you, one family is going to be very mad.
Could be Ben and Jerry.
Could be Ben and Jerry if they agree. But when you say, when Rabbi Akiva died, Batel Kvod HaTorah, no Kvod HaTorah, gone, right? How can that be? Rabban Gamliel lived before Rabbi Akiva, and already in his time there was no Kvod HaTorah. So what, it came back? Says Rashi, there's two Kvod HaTorahs, Rashi on that Gemara in Sota. The Kvod HaTorah Rabban Gamliel was, Lo ayu lemedim Torah elam umad, Mishem eit. Yarat Choli La'olam. Once upon a time, you weren't listening to a shir via Zoom by sitting down in your comfortable chairs. You were standing up, like we do when we get an aliyah. But after Rabban Gamliel Azaken died, all of a sudden we became weaker and we no longer stand. That's the Kvod HaTorah that went with his death. What's the Kvod HaTorah of Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva, Haya noten libo lidrosh kol kotz v'kotz shel kol ot. The kol shekain tevot yeterot votiot yeterot. Rabbi Akiva was medayek in every single letter of the Torah and started to derive from it various laws based on the letters and the lettering of the Torah. It says, ve'et, he learned from the vav something amazing. What's the difference between these two? One is talking about the kavod, the reverence, the honor. You give the Torah. You give it a kiss. The other is talking about keeping each and every law within it. Namely, when we keep mitzvot, it's not enough, in my opinion, to go ahead and to keep everything in the Shulchan Aruch. You have to somehow or another say, Ashreinu matov chelkeinu, umanayim goraleinu, mayafa yerushateinu. It's not enough, on the one hand, to say the Torah is so holy. When they take the holy Torah out of the ark, I give it a kiss. You have to also keep what it says in there. So, there's two assumptions I want to make at the beginning of this year. Assumption number one is that the Torah is about, first and foremost, knowing its laws. But it's also about knowing the reality outside where the laws are supposed to be kept. Therefore, we have two Birkos Kriyat Shema. You want a Mekabel Ol Malchut Shemayim? Reality? And books. Number two, keeping a Torah lifestyle is both the honor that you show it by standing for the Torah and by keeping all its details. Based on this assumption, as we get to this question, I want to analyze with you why I think what she said is awful. And indeed, if it wasn't the case, in a perfect world, Rabbi Lam, Zichrono Levracha, spelled it out when he said in 1969 what a modern Orthodox movement is. He said the following. Here's a picture of Rabbi Lam with Yitzhak Shamir, former Prime Minister of Israel. And who's that on the right? George Shultz, foreign, not minister, but Secretary of State of the United States of America. At Yeshiva University, beautiful picture. You have the Israeli Jewish guy, and you have the non-Jew. And who's in between? Rabbi Lam, Mr. Modern Orthodox, who said the challenge to our intellectual leadership is clear. To formulate a worldview of modern orthodoxy in a manner that is halachically legitimate, philosophically persuasive, religiously inspiring, and personally convincing. If only I can write this way. Everything rhymes, and that's it. Modern orthodoxy means capital M, capital O. And it means that, Josh, we have to work harder, not we have to work less hard. Modern orthodoxy doesn't mean, oh, we have a little Torah, we have a little modernity. No, we have to work harder. We have to sleep less hours at night. Because we got to do both. Halachically legitimate, philosophically persuasive, religiously inspiring, and personally convincing. But in reality, as Shuly Taubes says in the Harvard Divinity Bulletin, and we're talking about Shuly Taubes, a son of a rabbi, as he identifies himself, my first thought, to use a metaphor from Fiddler on the Roof about modern orthodoxy. What's the metaphor of Fiddler on the Roof? Whoever doesn't know that movie by heart has a very big flaw in their Judaism. It should have been the 614th mitzvah of the Torah to know that movie by heart. So right at the beginning of the movie, you have the Fiddler on the Roof. Why is it called Fiddler on the Roof? Because he has to try to play his little violin without falling off the roof and breaking his neck. And that's the story of Judaism. Says Shuly Taubes, modern orthodoxy is about living a life of intricate and at sometimes fragile balance, trying to create something enlightened and beautiful while walking on a very tight rope of tradition. Namely, what he's basically saying is, maybe Rabbi Lamb has this amazing view in the world of euphoria, but in reality, it's very difficult to have both the capital M and the capital O. With that in mind, let's see. The first point she made was that Judaism, and everyone picked up on this, it's what's good for me. Namely, it has to fit into my life. It's not so much what the books say that have to fit in, that I have to fit into. It's about me. I find that to be, excuse me for saying so, the end of Judaism. Why? When you start saying that Judaism is subjective autonomy of Jewish practice, namely, it's all up to me, whatever fits me goes, whatever doesn't fit me, I don't do. So, Shabbos afternoon, I'm learning Torah, and it says that when you're in shul, you can't learn during Chazorat HaShatz? I like to learn. I'm not going to keep that law. Next Shabbos, you're going to find a law that says when you make Kiddush, you have to pick up the cup. A tefach or three tefachim. Oh, that's fine. I'm going to do that. Then it says you have to make a motzi. No. I'm on a carb-free diet. Not making a motzi Friday night. Basically, that's what she's saying in the article. It's all up to me. I decide what to keep, what not to keep, and it's all called Judaism. And I hate to say this, but this, in my opinion, is the worst part of her article. Before you make your comment, I want to quote my Rebbe Rav Lichtenstein, who once said in a sicha, "Mi shemechapeset haKadosh Baruch Hu yimtza et atzmo." Whoever looks for God will find himself. But whoever looks for himself will find an idol. Namely, are we talking about Judaism? Or we're talking about Jephaism, or Arthurism, or Joshaism, or Tzviism? Don't call everything that you do Judaism. I'll give you an analogy. Before Pesach, I say this every year, it doesn't help me one bit. Women and men say we have to clean the house for Pesach. That is the worst statement ever. You know why? Because you are noseh panim laTorah. You are misconstruing the Torah, and you're doing it in such a way that you say you must clean the windows because halacha said so. You must clean the doorknobs of the house because Pesach is coming. You want to clean the doorknobs? You want to clean the windows? That's beautiful. Don't blame halacha on it. And vice versa. Not everything you do becomes Judaism. If you're looking for God, you'll find yourself. If you're looking for yourself, you'll find an idol. It's not about what fits me. You have to look in the Torah and see what does God want out of me, not what do I want out of the Torah. And allow me to give what I believe is the most radical example of it. In a book called The Habits of the Heart, Individualism and Commitment in American Life. Okay, a book from the mid-80s. There's a beautiful story about a lady called Sheila. What does she do? She actually named her religion after herself. You're hearing this, Alex? This suggests a logical possibility of 220 million American religions, one for each of us. Sheila Larson is a young nurse who has received a good deal of therapy and who describes her faith as Sheilaism. And she tells you what's part of this space? I believe in God, but I'm not a religious fanatic. I can't remember the last time I went to church. My faith has carried me a long way. It's Sheilaism, just my own little voice. So allow me to throw out the following. Everybody ready? I heard this from Rabbi J.J. Schachter many years ago. He said, what would have happened is if her name wasn't Sheila. Let's say her name was Judy. What would her faith be called? It would be called Judaism, yes. Gentlemen, that's not Yahadut, Judaism. That's a faith that's named after me. So you want to drive on Shabbos. You want to do things that are against the Torah. You're going to pay for it in the world to come. That's your business. I'll try to influence and inspire. I'll try to debate with you. But just do me a big favor. Don't call it Judaism. Don't call it Orthodoxy. Don't call it anything that has to do with the Torah. Call it after your name. But do not call it Judaism. It's not. Judaism, Ben Hashar, is about submitting to what the Torah wants of us and not vice versa. Looking in the Torah and saying, what does the Torah want out of me? Not looking and saying, I want to do this and that. Then I'll take the book and I'll see where it says it's allowed. Oh, it's not allowed? So what? I don't do it. So that's not allowed. But call it Judaism. That's not Judaism. If that's Judaism, then call it Sheilaism. Point number one. And that is, I think, the worst point in her article. Namely, it's all about me. I can care less what the books say. If it fits me, I do it. If it doesn't fit me, I don't. And you should know educationally, that is such a terrible statement. You understand what will happen the next time, Alex, you ask your kids to throw out the garbage?
Same as usual, no.
No, it doesn't fit my life. My life is about not touching garbage. Okay, so we'll leave the garbage in the house because it's not about me. It's not about, it doesn't fit my life. Not everything we do is easy, not everything we do is comfortable, and not everything we do always works with what I want. I do many things that I don't want to do. Cleaning the bathroom is not something any of us want to do. It's necessary. So, lahavdil, elef, alfe, havdalot, you cannot come to Judaism and say, whatever I want to do, I do, and I'm going to call it Judaism. You want to do anything you want to do? Your prerogative. Don't call it Judaism. You want to clean the windows for Pesach? You can clean the windows. Not for Pesach. It's because you want to clean the windows. Yes, Bruce.
I have a couple of
students
that I asked about yeshiva. Their wife, she was contemplating Aliyah. And he said that they like living in America. I said, is that all halakhic? He said, no, but that's the truth. Jews do what they like to do.
I think your Rosh Yeshiva was a very honest man. He told you it's not halakha. It's not Judaism. They don't care. They like living in America. Okay.
These Jews are living good Jewish lives, halakhic lives, and they like living in America. And that's the bottom line, is Jews do what they like to do. Those are exact Jews, the Orthodox Jews, do what they like to do. What they don't like to do, they don't do. And in this case, they don't want to go to everyone who's halakhically correct. It's a halakhically right thing to do, but they don't want to do it.
Bruce, your Rosh Yeshiva answered 100% honest and authentic, I believe. And I'll just give a different analogy because you're bringing up a more loaded topic. So I'll give a simple one. If you would ask your Rosh Yeshiva, how come Jews slander? It says you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara. And he would say the same answer to you. Well, Jews like to slander. And you would just give one follow-up question. Does that mean that it's no longer forbidden? What would he say? I don't believe that's what they're saying. I don't believe that's what they're saying for a minute. That's a different topic, not the topic today. It does not. I don't believe that's what they're saying at all. That's not been my experience, Bruce. My experience has been, you live in Israel, one day we'll all be there. They've never said, oh, you live in Israel? I disagree with you. I think you're not allowed to live in Israel.
They do. They definitely do.
They say to you, you're not allowed to live in Israel?
They say, I should ask for silence. I should not have come here. Exactly that.
Oh, they say to you that you should ask a Shaila to make Aliyah to Israel because it may be Usser. Bruce, you have a very interesting amount of friends, I must say. I'd love to meet them. If you can arrange a meeting, I'd like to hear this from them. I don't believe that's what Jews are saying about that topic. But again, let's leave Aliyah out of it for a moment. Take another Isser people don't keep, whatever it might be. No one's going to say to you, oh, because we don't keep it, it becomes mutter. That's exactly what Chazal were worried about when they say that if you do an Isser enough times, it becomes allowed and permissible in your eyes. Pardon?
Can I make a comment?
I don't think that's what they're saying. Yes, comment. Who's talking?
Okay. Avi.
Avi, yes, Avi.
Didn't we bring this upon ourselves, concentrating on small details of losing the big picture? Let's say eating lots. I mean, take a measuring stick and all that you get the exact amount of one bite less. You're not the kind of, you know, it's like you're losing the, you're throwing the bath, the baby with the bathwater. Concentrate so much on details, and then it trickles down. So we did bring some of this on ourselves.
Avi's saying something that's not so much what's wrong with her article, but more what's wrong with us. How did this happen? And Avi brings up one of the many reasons it happened, and that is, if I can just paraphrase what you said, Avi, he's basically saying, what did we deal with? We dealt with the technical aspects of halacha, which are important, without dealing with the spirit of the law, of what the experience of eating matzah every year should mean. So at the Seder, if all you spoke about was eat this amount and make sure you eat it in 4 minutes, then people said, if that's Judaism, a trained monkey can do it. I don't need to do it. And I think, Avi, you have a lot of validity in what you said, but that's a separate lecture, namely, how did this happen? I'm more dealing with the actual it happened. Let's understand it. But you definitely are bringing up a legitimate point, and I think that's exactly part of what's missing in our ongoing discussions around the Shabbos tables and shuls and whatnot. We deal a lot with the technicalities of halacha, which are important, and less with the spirit and the experience. And I'll just say it in one sentence, Avi. We have a brain, we also have a heart. It can't just be about the brain. Next point.
May I ask a question?
Yes, Irving.
Okay. Rabbi Tetzel, who just passed away not long ago. So his father was my rabbi when I was in Rabbi Jacob Joseph. And he liked to go in the afternoon to go up to the Catskill. His family was there. But when he went there, he liked to speak a lot. So the scout stops him and he says to him, do you know how fast you were going? He says, no, I have to get back to my family and it's almost Shabbos and that's why I'm speeding. So the cop says to him, he was a religious Jew, he says to him, Rabbi, it's not for 6 more hours that you're going to have Shabbos. So why are you speeding? So the rabbi says to him, write me a petition.
That's honesty. That's honesty. Don't blame Shabbos on your speeding if it's 6 hours away. And in general, speeding is not allowed under any circumstances. It's pikuach nefesh. Point number 2. The more liberal way is always correct. What she's basically saying is that modern is the most important thing. So even if I open the books, I'm going to look for the most mekel opinion, the most liberal opinion on everything, and that opinion is always correct. That opinion will always be correct. I hate to say this, but when you look in halacha honestly, you have to ask yourself, what does the halacha want out of me? And it can't be that each time the more liberal way is correct. Now, I'm not naive. When a posek comes to Paskin Ashayla, he's also coming with his personal ideology. He doesn't come totally neutral. Okay? But if every single time he's Mekel, there's something wrong with him. And if every single time he's Machmir, there's something wrong with him. And if someone just put out a book that basically suggests that in our generation where everything is terrible, we have to be machmir on everything, that's also incorrect. It can't be that each time you deal with a halacha of any sort, the liberal way will always be correct. I recently saw someone that wrote something about the Simchas Torah women's prayer group in an Orthodox shul. And basically what he did was, he said if there's a daya in halacha that allows it, we should allow it. And I looked at him and I said, really? So I guess when you raise your kids, if there's a parent out there that allows something, you allow it in your house? No, of course not. I said, so how come in halacha, if there's a daya out there that allows it, we go with it? Whatever happened to a debate, a discussion, analyzing, and deciding? Daniel Gordas makes this point. In the Safir Journal, he makes this point in a recent article that just came out in October. Jewish illiteracy has also, does anyone know this word? Anyone? I know what it means, but I can't say it correctly. Is it vitiated? Vitiated? Vitiated. What does it mean?
Allowed.
Permitted. Permitted Jewish pluralism. Absent Jewish literacy, who could possibly ground their views on any issue? So it's great. We teach people how to learn. We teach people how to do daf yomi. So instead of looking in the Torah and authentically saying, what does the Torah want out of me in this situation? Reality in this hand, books in this hand. We come and say, the liberal view is always correct because that's where I stand. I find that very problematic. So point number one is Judaism is not about what I want only. Absolutely not. Whoever looks for himself, looks for God, will find himself, not opposite. We are made in the image of God, not God is made in our image. And number two, the most liberal way is not always correct, I'm sorry. Number three, there's a certain notion here that bothers me even more, and that is what I call the, I made up a term, maybe you don't like it, it's called the instinctual sense of religious practice. Namely, how do I, you know, live a Jewish lifestyle by instinct? Whatever I think is right is okay. I close my eyes and I say, what do I think is right? And that's what I do. And many, many people have said this. I once was giving a class to rabbis to be, and we dealt with an issue which is a big issue today. I'm not going to belittle the issue and say to anyone that this is not a big issue, and that is planning pregnancy, putting off having children after you get married. That's a very big issue, complex issue, okay? That's not an issue for standing on one foot between Mincha Ma'ariv, and I refuse to answer those questions between Mincha Ma'ariv. If someone wants to discuss it with me, we make a meeting, we sit down, we discuss. But I once heard a rabbi with smicha in this class where I dealt with these issues saying, I once heard that on this issue, whatever the couple decides, it's okay. And I looked at him, maybe I didn't understand him, and he went over it again. I said, you know, I know a rabbi, conservative rabbi, big C, not small C, in a certain country, that I happened to be sitting next to on a plane. And I asked him, how do you paskin halacha? Tzvi, you ready for this? This is how he paskins halacha. Anytime he gets the shayla, Friday night in shul, he discusses with the people the shayla. I said, that's great, I do that too. I used to do that in my own shul. In my old shul, Friday night, I discussed the shayla. Now, once I discussed it with the people, I also gave them what the books say, because that they didn't know. But I wanted to hear their points of view. So he says like this, I discuss it with the people, and then we do a vote, and whatever the majority of the people decide, that's what I paskin. I said, do you open a book? Never. It's all based on the people. Namely, whatever their instincts are, that becomes Judaism. So, says Daniel Gordas in this article, and I love the article, a lack of familiarity with Jewish texts has made it inevitable that Jews must resort to an exclusively Western frame of reference. Nothing to do with what it says in the books. It's all about my instinct. Whatever I think goes. Once that happens, though, in what way are they Jewishly linked to Jews who see the world very differently from them? By the way, Daniel Gordas is not an Orthodox rabbi. You can look up his bio on Google. He says, in what way is it Jewish that by instinct you say this or that? By the way, that's one of the reasons why I don't like to read responsum that's called shut SMS without sources. If the shut SMS has sources, that's one thing. But if there's no sources, then it's the rabbi's instinct. The rabbi's instinct is interesting. Why do I have to read about it? I also have instinct. Zvi, you have an instinct. Bruce has an instinct. We can all have instincts. Then we go to the books. So if it's shut SMS with sources, that's one thing. But it's based on yes, no, because I'm a rabbi, I know. With due respect, with the power vested in you, you're still a nothing. You're a rabbi. That's supposed to be the conduit between the books and the people. You're not supposed to give your instincts as paskening halacha. Close parentheses. That's what's happening. My instinct says that driving on Shabbos is no longer in fashion. Not driving on Shabbos is no longer in the vogue. So therefore, not relevant. And it's still modern Orthodox. Did you look in a book? No. Did you open up a sefer? No. Did you discuss it with a rabbi? No. It's all about instinct. Whatever I think goes. My son taught me that as well. My son's now serving in the IDF, in the Navy, and he says that he divided the religious people into categories, and one of them is Dati Lefi Dati. And that's a great term. People, the younger generation is always smarter than the older generation. How do I know that? Because the Gemara says, Yemei Chorpi. When you were younger, you had Harifut. You were much, much more cynical, and you're much more sharper. Harifut. So I love that term. Dati Lefi Dati. Not, what does God want out of me? I'll open the books. It's all based on what I want. Dati Lefi Dati. Beautiful. Next. If you don't allow it, even less will be observed. Now here I have a bit of experience, because I was a rabbi in a very, very small town outside of Israel. Whoever knows my bio knows the name, it doesn't make a difference right now. The bottom line is, Daniel Gordas in his article says that that's exactly what we did in America. We started to cut, chisel. What did we say? Hebrew school 3 times a week is too much, we'll do twice a week. It's too much to ask bar mitzvah kids to come to shul, so we'll just ask them to come for their bar mitzvah. Oh, it's too much to have this, we'll dilute a little, because, you know, if not, they'll have nothing. So the minute one parent went along and said, well, I can't come to Hebrew school because my son or my daughter has football, ballet, or whatever it might be, we said, sure, no problem. We went with it. Because as long as they come once a week, you know, better something than nothing. Now, obviously better something than nothing, but is that ideal? Does that become the new ideal of Judaism? Better something than nothing? Or is something on the way to more? I have a lot of experience with this, and I can promise you, the more you dilute, the less you have. It's not a means to an end. And I really, truly am bothered by it. Just read what I wrote, what I quoted here from Daniel. Okay, services were diluted and shortened, and we robbed the liturgy of its power to move us to say anything, to hold on to an increasingly disconnected laity. American Jewish non-Orthodox leaders lowered the bar, demanding less, teaching less, even cajoling less, so that now the best and the brightest of the young American Jews have no sense of the grandeur that have been abandoned in order to retain their waning loyalty. Big mistake. Something is important. It's not all or everything, but we have always said, do something and hopefully you'll do more the next day. But no one in their right mind has ever said, oh, you know Aleph? That's great. Leave it at that. It was always, you know Aleph, hopefully tomorrow I'll teach you Bet. By Wednesday you'll know Gimel. Yes, Bruce. Okay, we're going to stop here. This is a longer conversation, but I just wanted to reiterate the 3 points we made because I find them to be critical and crucial at this time. Number one, Judaism is not about just what's good for me goes. That's dati lefi dati, and that's a huge problem. Remember Sheila of Shilaism? Just because your name is Judy, it doesn't become Judaism. Number two, the more liberal way is not always correct, just like the more machmir way is not always correct. That's not the way that authentic Jews should approach halacha. And number three, we also have to ultimately not paskin halacha based on instinct. We paskin halacha also based on the books as well as reality. And finally, the last thing we said was that point of, if you don't allow it, we'll do even less. That's never been the way. It's always, we will appreciate you do a little bit on the way to more. We will continue with this, God willing, next week. I find this to be critical at this time. And Bezrat Hashem, I hope to give a few solutions, not just complain. And Avi, you mentioned one, and hopefully we'll give a few others. Have a good day, everyone. I agree. I agree. Have a good day, everyone. Take care.